Blog Talk Radio.
Gotta keep reading, 'cause this book's gonna be a good book. 'Cause this book's gonna be a good book. 'Cause this book's gonna be a good, good book to read. Cause this book's gonna be a good book. Cause this book's gonna be a good, good book to read.
Pick up that book and turn the page. You'll never know just what you'll find. Information or fantasy, drama and art, I'll make you smart.
Marcia Cook, and it's a book launch party with, we're also Marcia and Virginia. We have not done a show, and we're doing a book launch today. I feel like after that music I should be singing, but I don't think I will sing. I don't think so. It makes me want to sing, but not on the air. Okay, this is going to be a lot of fun tonight. We're this is live, and it's going to be a tweet chat, and we're going to be on Blog Talk chat, and we're going to have a great time today, and it's with Donna McDine, and I will talk to Virginia. Hi, Virginia.
Hello.
This is fun on a Sunday night.
I know, it's different for us, huh?
I know, it's weird. Very weird, I know. But we've been getting a lot of tweets all day long, and my phone, my husband says, what is this buzzing? I keep getting every click, click, and every minute there's somebody tweeting, because we've been really advertising a lot, and I want to thank Blog Talk for featuring us, as always, and all the people out there that have been wonderful in tweeting and Facebooking and asking their friends to listen, and I appreciate it. So does Virginia. We really do. And it is Sunday the 29th, almost the end of this month, and it's 2013. And it's 7 p.m. in Chicago and 8 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Mountain, 5 p.m. Pacific. And sometimes it gets a little confusing where we all are, but we're all in different time zones, so we kind of like to say that. No, this is going to be fun today, and the chat room is open. Virginia, do you see that it's open, or the regular?
Yeah,
chat
the chat room is open, okay. And then also if people want to join us on Twitter, they can do the hashtag World of Ink and join the conversation there as well, because I have that going too.
Yeah, because we only have two announcements to make, and then it's all Donna's night. Okay. And okay. And we're having Thursday is Fran's show is on at 4 o'clock Eastern, and then she's got some great, she's having a PR person on. It's going to be really great. And we've not really had from public relations any really shows, but she's having one. It'll be really great. And then Friday, Willow, it's her first show alone with Jeff Glaze, and they're going to have a great time. It's a wonderful show. It's a paranormal show, and it's just starting. We had one already, and it's going to be fabulous. So everybody listen to those shows because they're going to be fun and new and exciting. And Virginia, isn't it fun? We're having all these new things.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see the stuff we have going on here. It's been a nice change, and
yes,
with so many different shows to offer people, and now you're doing the book launch parties as well on here,
yes.
So it's made it all fun.
Yeah, it is fun. Well, that's actually what I like is fun. Yes, we all know that. Okay, but if anybody wants to call in, they feel free to call in at 714-242-5259. And we're taking calls, and we're in the chat room, and Virginia is chatting on, I think Marnie, I don't know if Marnie's on or not. I can't see that she's in. I don't know. But Marnie McNiff may be with us chatting also, and it's World of Ink is the hashtag. So There we go. Okay. All right, Donna, before we begin, why don't you tell everybody about yourself, and so everybody will know what you, and then we'll start out and talk.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show tonight. I was really looking forward to this. And I got involved with Writing for Children back in 07, and these two latest releases joined my first release of The Golden Pathway, all different books, different topics, and I just have received quite a few awards for the Golden Pathway. These two books, since they're being so recent, I've been bestowed a couple of five-star book reviews on both of them through Reader's Favorite. And recipient of Writer's Digest Awards over the years for different submissions, and just really trying to keep honing my writing skills to really make these books appealing to children so that they're not preaching to them, but they are learning something in the process.
Well, I think one of the things that people don't realize is how hard it is to get any of those accolades at all. I mean, you know, people don't. You know, there's so many children's writers out there, and when you get something that really is, you know, a finalist or, you know, any of these things, it is really hard. It's not that easy, because I think people that aren't authors think that, oh, they got an award, okay, but it's really not easy. It's very hard. It's a tough competition in children's market. So
most definitely.
Yeah. So that's a great thing. Let's see, Virginia, are you with me here?
Yeah, I'm here.
Is anybody asking anything in the chat? Yeah, right.
Well, I haven't seen anything pop up. I'm flipping around. But I just want to say that I've known Donna since she first started getting into writing, and I've always been impressed with the way you write, because you make sure that when you come with a story, you naturally, and I love it because it's very organic, the lessons that are taught within your stories. Because, you know, a lot of writers who set out to write stories that have some type of moral lesson or to teach something about history, you can tell it's forced and it feels preachy, and yours isn't. It's very organic. It's very natural. It doesn't seem like you set out to do that, even though I know that's how you are as a writer. It's not a forced thing. It's a very organic thing. So I think, you know, a lot of teachers and parents are missing out who haven't discovered you as a writer for that reason.
Well, thank you very much. And with Powder Monkey, there is an educator's guide that goes along with the book, but it's also been written as a standalone, so the teachers can expand it even further on the historical topic beyond Powder Monkey. So that was something that the writer that put Educator's Guide together, she's a homeschooling teacher for many, many years with her own children, and she ranges from the age of elementary school, and now she has college graduates under her realm, and that have gone out on their own now. And Amy O'Quinn has done a phenomenal job on the Educator's Guide. And it's not just a history educator's guide. It covers every subject matter possible, where she really brings in from the beginning talking about the author and the illustrator of the book, but then bringing ELA into it, social studies, math, science, even bringing in the health aspect of within Powder Monkey, and then they also broaden that with different other book resources and website resources. And Powder Monkey actually deals with a lot with bullying issues, and Powder Monkey was derived from a writing assignment that another publisher had put out for a call for children's stories based on the Royal Navy. And through my research, I discovered that there was a whole segment of the Royal Navy with the press gangs. And the press gangs went out to the countryside and kidnapped boys as young as 11 and 12 and forced them to work on the ships. And they worked in deplorable conditions. They were treated horribly. And they were the young boys were the ones that would bring the powder cartridges up from underneath the ship, from down in the galley, up to the top board so that they can then fill up the cannons to fight the wars that were going on at that time. Many of them succumbed to the issues at sea with the bad hygiene and not eating well, and many of them just resolved themselves to the fact that they'd be living on these ships for the rest of their lives and never seeing their families again. So it's definitely a very heart-wrenching time period, but I really tried to capture the whole essence of his family at the beginning, so that that was something that tried to make him stronger to keep moving forward. And you'd have to read the book to find out on how it ends for the main character, Tommy Kitt.
I had no idea that even happened back then. I mean, I knew, life aboard of the ships wasn't great, but I didn't realize that they took kids. I had no idea about that until I read your book.
Yeah, but you know what? They do that. Now, I had a show, I think it was last year, and they do that now. They take, not on a ship, but they take young boys and young teenagers, and sometimes when kids are missing, they take them to foreign countries, and then they have them work for them. And then when they're done with them, sometimes they, at a certain age, when they get too old to do, you know, what they wanted them to do, they just kill them. I mean, this happens. This is, you know, it was very frightening to hear that now. So when you're talking about mm-hmm. times before, things happened years ago, and they happen now, where they take the kids away to different countries, and you never see them
right,
again.
Right, unfortunately, with the press gangs, they did not kill the young boys. They just,
yes.
they grew up on the ships. And then
yeah.
they became able seamen, and the cycle really never ends. And
mm-hmm.
My hope is that back at that time, the boys that were kidnapped and actually survived and grew up on the ships, that they treated the next round that much better. That's my
yeah.
hope.
Cause it's
and
horrible.
I never,
it's
with
it's
my
horrible.
Research,
yeah. Yeah.
I never came
to that. Yeah, but it's horrible that, you know, that they don't get to see their family again. So, but, you know, but you end, you know, I mean, these are things that happen, but the way you, you know, do it in your book and with your illustrations, I think that's, you know, gets people engaged in it. And so I think that, you know, sometimes people now don't realize things that happened before. And sometimes,
right.
it,
and
you know, yeah, it's such yeah. a fast-paced world now that kids don't realize that there were different times. I mean, everybody has computers, and, you know, they're on doing playing games and all that, but there was another time when people lived a certain way, not like this.
Right, exactly. And that's something that I've always been interested in history. That's why I wrote my first book, The Golden Pathway, that's based on the Underground Railroad, because I've always enjoyed history myself. And to be able to intertwine a fictional story into history
is great.
It's something that I really strive to keep doing, because I find that the students that I've come in contact with learn better that way, instead of sitting there with just a straightforward textbook. And
yep.
kids are more visual now, and they
yes.
really do
yes.
need the illustrations, even though my book is geared towards 8 to 12-year-olds. And people first see the illustrations, they're like, but this is not a little kid's book. And I said, well, it's not supposed to be,
right.
a, you know, a kindergartner book. This is supposed to be subject matter that children can relate and understand to more. And that's where I bring in the bullying aspect, because unfortunately, as we all well know, bullying
yeah.
runs rampant, especially
yeah.
with being how certain people use the keyboard as their protector as they lash out to someone else. It's very
yeah.
easy to be mean to someone when you're sitting in the comfort of your own home behind a computer
right.
screen and keyboard.
And you know what, though?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, we're not talking about adults, but unfortunately, I see this a lot on the Internet in general. It's happening to adults, too, you know. And so I think, you know, those are the things. And kids, you know, as they grow up, they don't realize that there were different times. And sometimes, you know, we were talking about on one of the shows that I had that, you know, doing research, I used to do a lot of research for my screenplays and things like that, and I enjoyed that. And somewhere along the line, I don't do as much research. And, you know, now I'm in some of my books, I'm going to try to, like, go to another country or something and try to do research, because really it does make it fun when you're doing research, because it's almost like you're learning some new things that you've never learned, you know, rather than just coming up in the top of your head, you're learning some things and you're putting it in a fiction book.
Right.
And, you know, and it's interesting, very interesting to do that. And I think, you know, and I do think there are a lot of kids out there that like to know about things and how things were in the past. You know, and I think, you know, even like in Nickelodeon and some of those stations, they're beginning to show some of the older shows where family values were a certain way. So kids, you know, they almost, you know, it's almost non-existent in the newer shows. So you don't see the same things, and the bullying is all year round. That's for every kid goes through this, even in college now. So, you know, that always is a topic that's interesting to other kids, I'm sure.
Right, and it's sad, because it just, and if you don't have that thick skin and that family or friend support, it really can consume you. Words hurt. And people, you know, it just, it's very difficult for people to overcome that, that words definitely do hurt, and there should be consequences for actions. And that's something that really needs to be taught more as a family, as students, that, you know, your behavior has consequences, whether it's, you know, a positive behavior that you have towards someone or a negative. There's different outcomes to your attitude towards people.
So now we should talk about the publisher a little, who your publisher is for these books. You know, people might want to know who published it for you. So should we talk about Guardian Angel a little? Or, you know,
Yes, it's Guardian Angel Publishing. And I first met Linda probably back towards the end of 07, towards the beginning of 08. I met her at the Muse Online Writers Conference. Virginia, I'm sure you're probably familiar with that because I believe you presented quite a few times at that.
Yeah.
And it's a great, great conference where you actually do it from the comfort of your home, which is like what we're doing this evening.
Yeah, I think I heard that before. What is it called? And when is that? Do you know when that is?
It's usually in October.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was free for a number of years. I think now Leah charges a small fee just because they have to pay for the open forum and they have like live chats. And then the presenters, when I was a presenter, we could either do a live forum chat or you could do your own segregated kind of area where everybody could post information in there and you would share tips or whatever, but it was only the people who signed up who could get into it kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was great because what you could do, you could attend different lectures. You'd have a whole schedule for the whole entire week, and depending where you are and what your time allowed you, you could attend anything from learning how to write a picture book to marketing your book to meeting different publishers in chat rooms. And it was truly a great experience. You almost feel like you hear the clicking of people's heels in the hallways as you're cruising around on there.
Yeah.
And it was a great way of really networking and meeting different people. There was workshops on what's the best way to critique someone else's story without, you know, totally attacking them personally.
Right.
And so that was another great aspect. So I had met Linda through one of the chat rooms, and at that time I had won an award with the Writer's Digest writing competition for a short story called Powder Monkey. The Golden Pathway. And what happened is that Linda sent me a note offline, and she said, I'm really interested in your synopsis of what you were chatting about. Can you send me the manuscript? So sending her the manuscript, she delightfully responded back to me and loved the story, but now that I wasn't under the word constraint for the contest, she wanted me to expand the story. So which I did, happily so, of course, and after, you know, several rounds of edits with her, she accepted that. And I really have enjoyed being an author for Guardian Angel Publishing. It's a true family sense. And so I continued submitting different manuscripts to her. And luckily enough, Powder Monkey and Hockey Agony were both accepted by her, and I have two other books in the publishing pipeline with her also. So that'll be a total of 5 books with her. And it's been a great experience. We do a complete networking with the fellow authors and the illustrators in the group, where we all exchange different ideas on marketing. There's always an annual event at a different location each time in the United States to whoever can attend it. We get together as a group, as a family, really. And Linda is very hands-on, and she really treats every one of her authors and illustrators like her child, that she really takes a real interest and concern and really wants you to blossom as a writer and not just that one particular book. She wants to see you grow. And sometimes other authors write middle grade or young adult novels outside of their realm of the picture books, and they move on to a different publisher for that, but they still stay connected with their other books with Guardian Angel, and she applauds that. And she really encourages people to broaden their horizons. So it's been and continues to be a very positive experience with Linda.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing. You know, I mean, you know, like one of the things that, you know, why we're doing the chat tonight is because, you know, there's a lot going on with adult books, and certainly with, you know, the romance books, and I, you know, have lots of shows and lots of things going on with that, but the children's market hasn't been touched like this, and I think that other children's authors, if everybody shares in on this, they can do the same and get their books out there as much as the romance people do. I think that sometimes when people write children's books, they don't realize that there's a whole world out there of, even if, you know, some of the mothers are writing romance, that they have kids. So if everybody, you know, started to join in on, like, a lot of these tweet chats, I think it would be good for everybody because, you know, the mothers of the erotic writers or the romance writers have kids, and then everything would intermingle, and it would be much better for the children's market because the children's market is losing a lot of writers because they're feeling very, you know, that there's not, it's not this, because since the e-books, it is a, it's very different than it used to be, and the school visits are different. So I think that, you know, these are things like what Virginia and I are trying to do with the tweets, is trying to get more people engaged in it and, you know, to hear what readers, the mothers are really thinking about how they want their kids' books, you know, because you don't always know, you know, and there are so many different kinds of authors out there, but they're still the same children coming up reading and, you know, and what they really like and what's interesting to them, because everybody wants their kids to read, no matter what.
Right, and it's important as parents that our children or guardians, whoever's in a child's life, the child sees that adult reading themselves. No. Whether it's the paper every day or, you know, a book in their own hands or reading off their Kindles or their iPads, that they actually see the adult in their life is reading too. Because, face it, even with math, with science, at first children don't feel that it's important that they expand their writing, their reading and writing vocabulary, but you need that in anything you do in this world. And the more you read, the easier it will be to learn, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, right, and so, you know, we continue to do this, and Virginia and I, you know, we used to have a lot more, you know, I had a lot of children, I also write children's books, and, you know, I do other things also, but, you know, the children's market, I've seen in the last couple of years, Virginia and I both knew a lot of people, that they're not here anymore. Virginia, is this true to you? Do you agree on this? I mean, it's...
Yeah, I agree, and I think the children's market has become a really, I mean, because I've been working on... the St. George Book Festival is going to be happening this October. And it was really easy to get the romance writers and the historical writers and the memoir writers out into venues, but getting children's authors into venues, I mean, even for like our local schools, was really, really difficult. It just seems like it's a really challenging market right now. Unless you're writing like fantasy, young adult. To get people to pay attention has been really hard, which is horrible because I know a lot of parents have started skipping over the picture book phase with their kids, and it's a sad thing to see happening. That's why I love Donna's books, because they're short like a picture book, but they're more of a picture story book because they're not quite a chapter book, but they're older. They're for an older reader, not for the picture book reader. So it's
hard to find the age group, isn't it? I mean, you know, because sometimes you think, like you say, picture book, and then the kids will go, oh, I don't want to read a kid's book at 11 or 12. But really the message and the story is not for little kids. It's more for, you know, the right age that you have it for it, you know, which is what's changed the market, is putting the age on it for the kids.
Big part what happens within the schools, at least I know in our area, they're always constantly challenging the children to do older work, which is great in an essence, but it actually becomes a detriment because they're not having a chance to really enjoy the moment as to what grade level they're currently in. And it's, they're getting robbed of that, I feel, that it's
because
just too much of
a
rush.
They're missing out. The middle part.
Because they're always like, come on, hurry up, read higher, read at a higher level.
Yeah.
But oftentimes when you have these children reading at too high of a level, they're reading material that their brain is truly not mature enough to understand.
Yeah. Well,
and
like a lot of the
just,
shows. Yeah, a lot of the TV shows.
Right,
a lot of the
exactly.
Movies.
And I'm all for, let's keep our children as long as possible.
Well, I think that's part, you're right on that. That part is missing. I think that's the missing link here, is because they go from little to then more of the young adult, which they miss that whole middle part.
Right. Right.
It's
important that they get engaged with their age level and stay that way for at least a bit of time before we start pushing them to higher level of working. And I think it's great that we do that, but there is a limit where you're pushing them too soon, too fast. And it's really a shame at times about it. And because with my three books, just by happenstance, they all fall into the realm of the bullying topic.
Yeah.
And it's important that these kids become comfortable in their own skin and can stand up for themselves or for a classmate or another friend, that they're strong enough to maybe not intervene with that particular bully, but to go to an authority figure. And it's something that has become very important for myself, because I've seen it too often where these kids are getting bullied and people are looking the other way. And I'm hoping that starts changing. And we start to see that it's changing more, but it becomes a main topic when something happens to someone tragically. And then it gets just ignored again because everybody's being pummeled with so much media that you almost forget that there's these kids hurting out there. So
yeah.
I really feel that these kids need to be able to hold on to their childhood a little bit longer than what's been happening.
Virginia, is anybody saying anything out there about, you know, what that they're thinking?
I've been interjecting, you know, what we've been talking about here between everything. So far, no, I haven't seen
one of the things I think that the schools could help with is, having more authors come to the schools, because the kids love to talk to authors about books and reading, and they like to hear about, they actually like to talk about, do they like e-books, do they like paperback, do they like hardcover, because these kids are still, like you're saying, they're kids, and some of them are just growing up the way that, a lot of people did in the past, and they do like reading a book and holding a book. And it isn't every kid that wants an e-reader, and a lot more kids are getting them, and the schools are giving them, which is good. But it gets the kids talking about all these things. And in school now, they have the kids writing books, little books. So I think that's what one of the things, if the schools could help out a little, I think the children's authors would be staying in it more, because they would feel like, that there's people paying attention to what they're writing.
Right. And what's happening, too, unfortunately, with the schools, at least in the area that I'm in, the cutbacks are so dramatic that it's difficult to have a guest author come in, because they just don't have the funds for it.
Yeah,
and their curriculum is so tight.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, free, how much better can it be than free? Do you know what I mean? You're saying I'll come in and talk to the kids for free. And they go, well, we only
have
time.
And that's where I'm getting to my next point. The curriculum that they're on is so tight, and their schedule is so tight to get to the point where they have to be prepared for their standardized exams, their midterm exams. They have milestones that these teachers need to reach. So it becomes more and more difficult for them to have a guest to come in.
Yeah.
So that's why it's so important that as authors, especially for the children's genre, is to have an educator's guide. And I know that that's what's helped me to get my foot in the door to different schools in the area, as when I'm talking to either the PTA or to the librarian to get something scheduled, their eyes light up when they hear that there's an educator's guide with it, and more so that the educator's guide is a standalone also, and that at the end of it broadens further what the teacher could be doing with different books or websites that they can access so that they can develop that curriculum even further for them. So that, to me, in my experience, that's what's happening. The schools are under such time constraints that it's difficult for them to have these authors in. And another way of getting into the schools is to get involved. Like where I live, they have a segment every year called Rockland Read-In, and every school in the county on that particular day, they do not do their normal curriculum. The kids read all day long.
Yeah.
And then that's when a lot of authors in the area do come in to visit, and they read not necessarily portions out of their own books. They read from the book that the class selects, and they get to meet these kids. They get to engage with these kids. And I've actually had some students that have kept in touch with me via email after their parents have given written approval that they can be in touch with me. And they update me as to what they're working on. So it's really fascinating and very heartwarming that these kids are really putting pen to paper.
Yeah, that's great.
And,
well, I was going to have you, Donna, share a little bit what, because I mean, I'm a, Marsha and I both write, so we know what teacher grades are, but I know there's a lot of, sorry, am I getting a call coming on my phone? There's a lot of new writers who don't know what teacher guides are, and there's probably parents out there, especially like homeschooling parents, who probably don't realize that there are these guides available for books. Can you share a little bit what a teacher's guide is or a reading guide is for a book? That because I know a lot of the middle grade and YA authors are starting to have that at the back of their book, or even as a separate part, like yours is
right.
From their book.
Right. The particular ones that I have are not enclosed within the back of the book. It's a very comprehensive, it's a book on self, and they generally run probably anywhere from 20 to 26 pages. And through that, at the very, like, for the very beginning of the book, it gives the whole synopsis of the book, information about the author and the illustrator, and really it's the nuts and bolts that covers all the different curriculum subjects. And what really helps with that is that it's the educator's guide is not just written at for social studies for like Powder Monkey. There is all different aspects within it for different activities. And each of the sections, for instance, the language arts section of Powder Monkey, has a whole journal entry section, an analysis of a photo, and as to why the student feels that this particular photo can inspire a story. There's a vocabulary building. There's nautical language that the children can learn, and a word search that's all part of it. And it really gives the teacher an opportunity to grasp on to different aspects for their students. You may have a student that really, truly loves to write, and the journal entry really can nurture to that. But then if you need to cover something further that you have other students that are more visual, you can go with the photo.
Were you a teacher? Were you a teacher?
No, I was not a teacher, but I come from a family with many teachers in it.
Yeah, see, because
I had gotten
a... Yeah, if teachers get upset, isn't this like almost telling them their job, kind of in a way, you know, like, do you know what I'm saying?
Well, what I did with the first development of the Educator's Guide for the Golden Pathway, I actually, teachers within my district and my sister who happens to be a teacher, I got their feedback from it.
Oh.
And I asked them that question. That was my main question. I said, I am not educated as a teacher. I'm not trying to tell you to do your job, but what do you feel about something like this?
Yeah.
And every single one of them said, we love it because
great.
Our time is so constrained that we don't have the time to do all this research. And for this to be readily available at our fingertips, we applaud it. We applaud it. And what happens, too, is I didn't write the educator's guide. I brainstormed with the whole homeschooling teacher. She was really instrumental in putting this all together, and she really wrote it from a teacher perspective. So they really appreciated that fact that it wasn't your children's author telling them how to do their job.
See,
it
right,
was another
right,
educator.
Yeah. Right, because I can't, you know, like I can't, you know, like I've written four books, and I'm thinking to myself, if I sit here and tell them what I think they should be saying, they'll probably say to me, even though, I mean, I worked in a pediatric office for years in the medical field for you know, I was drawing blood and things like that. And I can't imagine them wanting to hear what I have to say as an author because they have their own curriculum. I'm just, that's,
right.
You know, I'm just thinking because, you know, but your sister was a teacher, is a teacher, and though, so probably the school maybe listened a little more because she brought you in.
And what helps, too, is that each state has their own educational guidelines.
Yeah.
So that's something for children's authors or whatever author wants to have an educator's guide with their book, that they really need to do their due diligence for their at least their state guidelines so that they can start getting a better gauge as to what is being mandated from the state. And you can actually take it as far as every state so that you're more appeasable to everyone around. It's a long journey, but it's definitely very worth it.
I, you know, it sounds so interesting, but I honestly got to say that all the authors that I've had on, I've never heard this talked about, you know, like this. And I'm wondering that, you know, I'm thinking that, you know, most of the authors have been on, you know, Virginia, have and you talked about that on your show at all?
I have quite a few authors besides Donna who I know that have done teacher guides. Or educator guides, is what they're most known. I know a lot of YA books, toward the back, they have like a, I hate calling it an educator's guide because it's like questions that are within the book that touches only some of the different themes or subplot themes that are in the book to get kids thinking. So I know that's real common practice.
Which is what happens when, you know, when you go to school is when the author goes, like I know, you know, my snack attack is about, you know, eating right, you know, and how kids can overeat and things like that. And when I'm at the school, the kids, you know, then we would discuss about, you know, what they ate for breakfast. And actually, pretty much a lot of the kids had a good breakfast. Only one kid, like, had, like, a cupcake, but the rest of them had, like, other, you know, like, eggs or whatever or toast. So, you know, but it brings up a conversation with the kids. It depends, on, I guess, on the school because the teachers, you know, they were very, certain schools that I've been at, they've been really nice and they let the kids talk. You know, and so it turns into something like that, which is, but it's the teacher allowing it. So I think it probably depends on what their curriculum is, right, and how they feel about it. And sometimes when I've been there, they go, oh, yeah, we're just talking about this or that, and then they'll interject. But sometimes, you know, I'm just, because I know a lot of teachers, and I just can't imagine them wanting, you know, people to tell them exactly, because I think they should be understanding what the message is as teachers. That's what I'm thinking, you know, myself. You know, that's why probably nobody I've had on had really discussed this. It sounds interesting. It does sound, you know, that's something to do for authors if they're having trouble getting, you know, because I think a lot of children's authors can't get in schools and they don't, you know, they don't interject, you know, what they're feeling to kids. And the kids love it. So, you know, I guess it depends on what. I'm in the Chicagoland area, so it might be different.
Here's a question for you guys, because this is something that I've seen starting to happen, you know, lately with some schools. I know schools are now doing, well, they've always done, like, parent night type different activities throughout the school year. And I know my daughter's elementary school, they're actually having a literacy night. And they actually asked me to come speak and talk a little bit about, you know, so have you seen that, Donna? Have you seen schools, because from what you're saying, a lot of them not having the time to in their schedules to allow authors to come and do full-day visits or half-day visits that we used to see happening. Have you seen, like author nights or literacy nights happening that authors can kind of get involved in, or have you been involved in anything like that? Because I'm really interested to see what's going to happen at my daughter's school, because this is the first time they're doing it, and I'm like, okay, this is going to be an interesting idea.
Right. I haven't seen it in strictly in my area, but the local libraries try to do something. Because with all the libraries that are here in Rockland County, they're all part of the Catskill Library Association. So what they try to do is they rotate it around from different libraries throughout the region, not just in our county, and they try to celebrate the children's authors at least once every year to year and a half, and it's something that is growing a bit more.
Good.
And it really, I think anything, it's a crapshoot, really.
Yeah.
It's just like retail. You know, some days you'll get a really good turnout. You'll do the same type of program maybe an hour and a half away, and your foot traffic is down by half. So it's just, it's a frustrating marketing. As Virginia knows very well after working in marketing in the fashion industry for so long, the trends change so quickly.
Yeah.
So it's hard to tell, but our area around here has not done something like that. It may be something I may want to start broaching with the different school districts around here to get some more appeal going.
Yeah, it sounds good. I mean, a very updated new thing. I think it sounds really interesting to do that.
Right. Virginia, I'd be interested in hearing more about how that goes for you. So please shoot me an email when you experience that.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see, you know, because I know we're doing ours in November, so it's after book month because October is obviously.
Always feel bad that all these children's writers, a lot of authors that we've had in the past and we've seen, a lot of them are not writing anymore, and this is such a shame. You know, the libraries have cut programs, you know, in certain areas. I guess it does depend on areas, and that's one of the reasons why I think the launches are so terrific, because, you know, and, you know, if the publishers, you know, and the PR people, if they would start, you know, getting involved in these launches, I think that this is going to be very successful, because I do think that, you know, sometimes they don't hear of a book, you know, because there's so many authors, that these launches bring you out there. And even if they're not, like, coming in right now, they're listening. So, you know, because it is difficult to get people to come on and want to talk, you know, maybe eventually this will happen. But when they listen to this, it engages in them to hear all these new ideas. You know, and because sometimes you don't think of these things. And, you know, that's why the radio shows, Virginia and I both have done over 400, I don't know, so many. And it's, you know, you really meet a lot of people, you learn a lot of things. And I think that authors need to sometimes listen to some other people, you know, because it does help. Because I think, you know, a lot of people don't realize how tough it is, like I said before, like to get, you know, an award or things like that when you're in competition with millions. I mean, there's so many children's writers out there. So it's so different than they think.
And that's something, too, that Guardian Angel Publishing really tries to focus on, is that constant engaging with one another and sharing the different ideas. We haven't mentioned much about Hockey Agony, so I'd like to talk about the Hockey Agony book a bit more.
let's go on to that. Right.
Hockey Agony really derived from, we're a very sports-oriented family, as well as my siblings and my in-laws and all their kids. And after visiting them and watching them compete in sports, the nieces and nephews and my own children, and reading different articles from across the nation, the horrible behavior from parents in the stands or out on the field, and some coaches actually trying to teach their players to inflict bodily injury to win the game, to try to cheat at the game, and it's deplorable. And I'm all for one cheering your kids on, but it should be a healthy competition. It shouldn't be, let's do whatever it takes to win the game, because at the end of the day, what really matters is how you conduct yourself versus the good old score. So I developed this story based around hockey because several of my nephews are very big hockey players, so I really want to focus on a particular sport that's been very active with someone in the family. And it was really based around how this one particular player on the team broke his leg playing the sport, and then he couldn't play for the rest of the season. And he was then elected by the coach to have to run the clock. Well, some of his teammates, saw that as an opportunity for him to shave a couple of seconds off the clock. And if anyone that is listening and knows anything about sports, especially a time-based sport like soccer or basketball or hockey, a few seconds is critical to how a play gets run out and everything. So he really grappled internally with himself as to how he's going to handle this, what he's going to do. And he engages with the coach on different aspects, and he ends up having to make a decision at the very last minute as to what he needs to do. And it's something that I think children, unfortunately, have to grapple with almost on a daily basis, whether it be the right thing of not cheating on a test,
yeah,
not cheating at a sport, not lying about something to, you know, your parents or to a teacher. That honesty is really, the old saying, is the best policy.
Yeah, and that's universal.
Right, it really is. And it was in a very exciting and very personal story that I wrote about this, because watching especially adults at times, the way they conduct themselves is a travesty. Because our children learn from our actions, and if we're going to be crazy about something, they're going to be.
Yeah.
And it's really not the way we need to be raising our children. And I'm not trying to preach to whoever's listening out there, but it's so important that we always put forth a positive example for our children. I mean, we all fail out of the times because we're all human, but it's very important that our kids know that just because you won or lost the game, that's not going to determine you for the rest of your life. And Amy O'Quinn, the homeschooling teacher that did my other two educator guides, is working vigorously on an educator's guide for this. And this is really going to be based around learning the sport of hockey, because it's centered around this, but really going about your personal ethics and really not being bullied by someone because they say so. So I'm very excited about it.
You know what the funny part is? But the part that kids don't get is that in a few years they won't even know that person sometimes. They're never going to see them
exactly.
again. And so if they're going to follow them, it's going to follow someone they may never see again. So, and that's why, like, a lot of times at reunions, they'll always go, oh, there's the guy that was the bully, or there's the girl that was mean to me. Because kids, no matter who you are, no matter where you go to school, you remember those things. It just, a nickname that somebody called you that wasn't that nice, I don't care how old you get, you don't forget those things. It just sticks with you. It may not hurt as much, but it's there. You always remember it. And
yes,
they would
definitely
learn at a young age not to do this. But I guess kids, you know, it's true. History repeats itself, but the parents really need to, because lying is, it never gets anybody anywhere.
No, it just makes the situation a lot worse. And Julie Hammond created beautiful illustrations to go along with this. And I've been lucky with all my books. I have Julie Hammond did this particular book. She's actually was assigned to another one of my books that's in the publishing pipeline, so I'm really looking forward to seeing that. And Casey Snyder, just phenomenal with her historical take on all the illustrations. And I do have to thank them for their hard work and their expertise and their genius all behind it, because each one of their illustrations, they just connected with what my thought process was with the whole gamut. And it was pure delight to have these illustrators work with me on these books.
Virginia, were you going to say something? Yeah, Virginia.
I want to talk about the hockey agony and the whole sportsmanship kind of thing that runs it. What's interesting is, I mean, I was on track, so it's a little bit different sportsmanship, because you, even though we're a team, you're still kind of an individual on your team versus having to be a team player to some degree, because you all want to be first place, obviously, when you're running. But the one thing I've noticed with sports from when I was in school to the way it is now, it seems like building each other up and helping somebody where they're weak become stronger, and, of course, relying on each other's strengths to make a team strong, that Hockey Agony really hit on the fact that cheating and being the best and do whatever it takes to win is really what kids are learning. I can't remember where I was reading it, and I don't know, maybe it was last month when I was doing a tour, when we had one of our touring authors, but there was a town somewhere, I don't remember where, in the U.S., that when it was okay. when it was during the Easter egg hunting time, or maybe, Donna, maybe it was you who mentioned this, it was during your tour, it's all blending together, but they were, like, encouraging the kids to, like, for example, like, the 12, you know, like, how different towns or cities will have the Easter egg hunt, and they'll divide the kids up by age groups?
Right.
And parents were encouraging their older kids to go into the younger kids' lanes so they could get more eggs in their basket. And I'm like, what the heck?
Right, and something as simple as that. And children will carry that over into another aspect of their life.
Yeah.
That way, mom and dad are condoning that, so let me take it to the next level the next time. And that's where it gets really concerning. And I'm all for sports, keeping your child out of trouble. And if anything, if my daughter, who still plays basketball now, if she can walk away with adapting to the different coaches and the different players and take that with her into the classroom, into college, and into the workforce someday, it's served its purpose. Because face it, we all have to adjust to the different personalities, and she'll have to bring that, if she gets married someday, she'll have to bring that into the family that she marries into.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's an important tool that if we can teach our children that that's what's important. And it just, there's just so much more to life than the almighty win.
Yeah, I was when I read your book, I totally thought of the movie Varsity Blues. And how the coach and the sports doctor was injecting the kids' knee just so they could keep winning.
Yep.
And kids were playing with major injuries, and it wasn't being reported just so the team could win. And I'm just like, oh, my gosh, this is almost as bad as Varsity Blues.
Right. And fortunately now we're starting to get away from that, oh, shake it off. Shake your twisted ankle off. Keep playing. Now it's taken much more seriously if someone turns an ankle, someone hits a head.
Yeah.
They're taken out of the game, and rightfully so. And the sooner we teach, and the sooner we teach our children, it's about the way you live your life in a positive manner, the better they will be.
It's
very important. So, like I said, I'm very excited about getting this educator's guide done by Amy because she is extremely talented in what she does, and. So it's a great way
So now she does this for you, the educator's guide?
Right, I hire her for it.
You hire
and
her, okay.
She takes the whole synopsis of the book, she takes the manuscript, we exchange ideas as to what I envision that should be in the educator's guide, and she basically takes it running then. She does a lot of research on her end. Even with this educator's guide, she's going to be including everything and anything about the Zamboni that cleans the ice. She'll be talking about the game of hockey itself with all the rules and regulations and really expanding on the sports aspect, but then getting back into how an ice ring is measured, what's the size of it. So it brings that all into the math aspect and how much ice is actually usually in an ice rink. So that's just really a tip of the iceberg, no pun intended, that Amy will be developing further. So it should be another nice, solid piece of work to put with this book, and it'll also be another standalone also, which is important.
You know what, Virginia, we probably should have, you know, maybe one a show with some of these different types of people on to see what, you know, we've not really had shows like that, so... It might be interesting to hear what they have to say, you know, about this, because I could say that, you know, that maybe that could help a lot of people get themselves into the schools with their, you know, book rather than,
I think even homeschooling parents who aren't aware, because, I mean, there's a lot, I know homeschooling is becoming a big thing.
Yeah, it is.
As well as a lot of parents, and this is, you know, giving them more tools to help their children as well.
Right.
Right, and it helps them because of... Right, and it helps the homeschooling group because their time is just as limited because not only are they teaching their children, they have that pull of what needs to be done at the house. They have to be probably even more structured than a standard public school or religious school that you go to, because they have to be more accountable for their time and their milestones that their students/children need to reach.
Yeah.
Definitely not an easy balance.
No. Now, the other thing I wanted to touch on, and I don't know if anybody's mentioned this or to you, Donna, and your books and stuff, but because they are for an older reader, the one thing that I've noticed is they really resonate to me anyways for that reluctant reader group. And I hate saying reluctant reader boys, because I know boys are reluctant, but I think there's as many reluctant reader girls out there as well. Is that kind of part of the reason why you've written your books on, instead of being like a full-length kind of chapter book style or even a middle grade style, was that ever in the back of your mind or purposely done? Because I've noticed that all three of your books you've written are more of that picture storybook, shorter chapter book kind of style, which appeals to someone like my older son, who hates reading and has hated reading his whole entire life.
Well, no, I thought that too, because I kind of looked at the beginning, I'm thinking like, wait a minute, how many pages is this? Because the way it was going, I thought it was going to be more pages, but the story ended. It ended with the message, and it was a complete story. So that was an interesting way to do it, where it's not long, because that is true, that if we have a reluctant reader, if they're going to see the book is 100 pages, they're not reading that book.
Right, and I did stumble onto it quite accidentally. My oldest child was always a reluctant reader. But if she was given a book that she truly enjoyed, then she would sit and devour it. And I found that if it wasn't something so lengthy, she truly enjoyed it. So it really just started evolving itself on its own. And it was quite by accident, but it's something now that I'm writing towards more now. And my next two books, Sandy Grave and Dean Deb Off They Go, they're both the same type of format also. The Dean Deb Off They Go is, though, for kindergartners through third. So I went a little bit younger on that particular book. And I've received positive responses from this for a couple of reasons. Because of the time constraints that the teachers do have, that this type of book a child can get through rather quickly, the visuals with the illustrations is definitely a plus, and because as they've told me in many different conversations I've had with different teachers at different grade levels, different abilities, they say that now the way this world is, how we have so much coming at us at once, we need something that is going to grab them, and the colorful illustrations definitely draw the children in, and it's a good way of getting a child that's not so interested in reading, that they know that every other page has an illustration for them, and it gives that whole concept also for a teacher when they get to that illustration before the child turns the page. You can engage them and say, what do you think that happens next in the story? And what I do a lot with the students that I meet with, I ask them to continue the story at the end. What do you think that happens to Tommy Kitt? What do you think that happens with Larry with the hockey? Does he go back to playing? You tell me. You expand it. And I take it even further with the children about doing their own journal writing. Nothing's wrong. You just write in your journal what you want to write about. It doesn't have to be a structured story. It can just be an event that happened to you on this particular day. And that no idea is wrong. And they love that feeling. And that I said to them, though, if they're willing to share their writing, we will share it towards the end of class. And I would say more than half the class raises their hand as they're done. I want to show you what I wrote. I want to read it out loud.
Yeah.
And that warms my heart, because these kids are sitting there with pen and paper away from the computer, and they're letting their imagination go. And
well,
a lot of these kids, don't they ask you these things?
Don't they ask you, though, the fact that, don't they say, how do you write it? Do you write on the computer or do you write it on a paper? You know, because I think a lot of kids, you know, sometimes they write it, they're not using computers. Not everybody writes on computers.
And they do ask me that. And as Virginia knows, I always write my first draft longhand.
Well, I do.
Away
I do
from the computer.
I do, too.
Yeah.
I write a lot of my, I like sometimes I'll go to a restaurant or something by myself and I'll just write things down and I'll write like a chapter or whatever I'm doing and I'll write it down and then I put it on the computer later. But I just, when I'm using just longhand, it's kind of like my brain is really free then. I don't have to think, I just let it go. Because it's very different when you get to sit down by the computer. It's almost like that's the job, and the fun part is just writing it while you're out or listening, you know, just writing it longhand. I still think that's fun. I like that, to me.
Right, and what I find, too, is I get away from the distraction of the computer.
Yep.
I don't hear my Outlook downloading email automatically.
That's right.
I'm not tempted to go check on another site. I sit away, weather permitting, on my patio underneath the canopy, with a nice hot cup of tea, and I just write. And I don't worry about editing. I just write. And I work off, especially with the historical fiction books, I work off of my research.
Yeah.
And I'll keep sticky notes next to me, so if there's something that I want to expand on, but I don't have that idea yet, I mark it with the sticky note and jot myself a quick note, but I just keep writing.
Yeah, that's
and
what I
really... Right, and I do my editing once I type it on the computer. I print out my hard copy, then I do my editing.
I do.
And I'm at the particular boss that I work for right now is a personal assistant. That's how I do my work with him. And so it's something that he's come to terms with, that's the way I work. Because he does everything on the computer, which is wonderful because that's the way he works. But I'm old school. I like to have that paper in front of me with my pen and marking away. And then I go back and do the specific edits on the computer. I find it less distracting. And but to get the kids engaged like that is a fantastic way. And even through Oriental Trading, you can get very inexpensive little pocket journals with pens. Mm-hmm. And I give them out to the kids.
Yeah.
And they are just elated to have something like that.
Write a note.
And,
write a note. Yeah,
right. That, and they, I said, you can keep that in your backpack. You know, something's bothering you, open up your journal and write about it.
Yep.
And it's yours. No one else has to see it. No one has to read it. If you don't want to share it, you don't have to share it. But when I have half the classroom raising their hands saying, I want to share with the class and with you what I just wrote, it's fantastic. It's priceless, absolutely priceless.
Sounds like, I haven't been to the schools and see, because I really enjoyed that. That was, like, so great and so much fun. I used to walk away feeling fabulous. I loved it. It was just so interesting talking to the kids, you know, because they're so bright and they have so many different ideas and they have questions. It's so much fun, you know, and I could see that you have fun doing that. That's a good thing.
And it's a great way of engaging, because as an author, it can become very isolating. So it's very important to reach out to the community, to even just go into the library and volunteer to read the book, any book that the children want to select off the bookcase, and just engage with them, because that's the best tidbits of dialogue you'll ever have for your writing. Is when you sit and you either eavesdrop on these children or you actually jot down what they're saying to you, because out of the mouths of babes, they have the best comebacks, the best perspective on everything. And it's like that cell phone commercial that's on TV now with the adults sitting with the kids at the table. It's great. Mm-hmm. And when you really get down to their level, you sit – height-wise, I mean, not, you know, saying that we're dropping our level of conversation with them. You sit in their chairs, so you're eye-to-eye with them. It's amazing the engaging conversation you can have.
Oh, that, you know what? Talking to a young, like, kid, the questions, when I would leave, I go, great questions. I had such a great time because they ask better questions than the adult asks, you know, and I thought, like, this is so much fun. Yeah, Virginia, what were you going to say? You're going to say something.
Oh, Donna answered. I was going to ask her what would be, you know, what's her favorite, you know, memorable, you know, time as being a children's author, but she pretty much answered it being with the kids and the sitting down and having that one-on-one interaction with them.
Yeah.
Right. And oftentimes, too, when they know that they're not being judged by anything, that any question is game, it's hysterical what comes out of their mouth. I had a student one time, he was probably about 10, 11 years old. He goes, I love to write, but will I make money from this? Will I be...
And
he's
just know the, we know the answer to that question.
He goes, because I'm not wasting my time if I can't make money off of this. So, and the honesty that you get from kids is great.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
just great.
Virginia, has there been any, you know, I mean, I think, you know, I think I hope that all these children's authors are listening, which I'm sure that they are, and, you know.
Well, we have a lot of people listening, Marcia. Just
yes,
no
I know that.
Is,
I know that. Right, they're not interjecting, right, you know.
Yeah,
because,
I have
right.
quite a few people that have been texting away at me.
What are they saying?
They're actually saying that they're really enjoying the conversation, and I have a couple of teachers that are texting me right now, and they're just saying that everything is going great. You sound wonderful. Keep up with the great information. Keep talking about those educators' guides. Came from another teacher.
Okay. That's a good thing.
Right.
I mean, you know, if anybody's out there, you know, you could have whoever's writing the educator guys that you know, that they can just, you know, call me or whatever, and Virginia will give you my number, and I'll be happy to have them on a show, you know, because I would like to hear more about that, because I think that that would be really wonderful if the educating, if that will help a lot of these children's authors get their points across, you know, to the kids, you know, and get to be in the schools again, because that would set us aside from some of the companies that go in and have the book days without the authors. And the kids are missing out. That's what I feel bad about. The kids love it, talking to authors. They really do.
Oh, yeah, definitely. They do. They get very excited. I've also, many times I've had teachers say to me, wow, I've never had my students sit still for so long.
Yep.
And
that's
another heartwarming comment, because as we all know, kids get ants in their pants. They can only sit still for so long. And if you can engage a classroom of 26, 27 kids for 35 minutes after your intro is done and then your goodbye is done, you've done your job as an author.
I know.
You really have been able to do that.
Because that's really funny because, you know, when I went to schools, I would go there and then I would read. And no, at first we'd talk because I thought, like, they could have questions, you know, about the radio shows and things like that. And they would have talks about the books and we talked about everything. And then I thought, well, all right, fine, maybe I won't read the book. Then they go, like, oh, read the book. So I read the book. And I was so shocked that they wanted to buy the book after I read it. I'm going, like, oh, great, I'm buying the book. But, you know, because sometimes with kids you really get honesty, because if they don't want to buy it or they're not interested in it, that's it. You're not,
and that's,
you know,
what's
not
great about kids. You'll always get the honesty. And another way that I get them engaged from the moment that I come in to the classroom is once the classroom teacher has introduced me briefly, I say hello to the class and I start off with the book trailer.
Yeah.
And they love that. And more often than not, they don't understand what book trailer means, so I tell them it's the movie trailer that they see on TV for movies.
Right.
It's just about the book. And it engages them. And before it even ends, at least three or four students are raising their hands with questions. And they want to know, you know, how is the book trailer done? How did you decide what portions of your book are in the book trailer? And and what's great, they love that whole technology aspect of it. And so that's been a great engaging way to open up conversation with them, too. And so that's definitely been another key marketing tool. And I have all the book trailers up on my website and on my blog. And
you didn't take that down yet. Why don't you do that? Let's give your website and where they can find your books and any information that you want to give.
Right. My website is www.donnamcdine.com, which is DONNAMCDINE.com. And then my blog is Lisa-McDine.blogspot.com. And my books can be found on Amazon, Guardian Angel Publishing, Barnes & Noble. You can go into your local bookstore and request it, and they can order it for you. And so there's definitely easy ways to do it. If someone's interested in an autographed book, they could just go to the homepage of www.donnamcdine.com, and they can order it through there, and they would get free shipping with an autographed book.
You know, you might like to also look into Magic Block, because we've had them on the shows, and it's a small library that the kids can make up for themselves out of a lot of books, and authors can read books on there, and it's an interesting site. It's Magicblox, one word, and you know, you should probably put your books on there, and then they can look through your books on there, because now they're turning the pages with the books. It's a very cute site.
Right, and Bedtime Stories is another website that does something similar with that also.
Okay. Bedtime Stories. Okay, yeah, all these new things, and that's one of the reasons I'm so happy we had a launch, for children's books, because we really, Virginia and I, feel strongly about keeping the children's market alive and authors still writing and not giving it up because they feel that there's no audience for them, or the schools aren't letting them in, or the bookstores are not having book signings like they used to, because the bookstores have gone out of business. So, I mean, keeping children reading is like number one.
Right, and we have a lot of different forces that make it more difficult for us to even get into the independent bookstores because their funds don't allow them to be doing it, or they're looking for the real high-profile authors, the ones that already have a celebrity name attached to it. So it's extremely difficult to compete against that. And it's just, so we really have to get into the trenches ourselves and almost create our own opportunities.
Right. That's very true. That is true. Because, that's why Virginia and I, we decided to do things like this because, there's a lot of book launches for adult books, and they do a lot of different things, but not for children's books. And the same authors are the ones that get to do the book signings, but there are tons of children's authors that are really worthwhile and great. They have messages and great illustrations, and it's fun. And that's why we decided to do this, because Virginia and I feel so, right? I mean, we talk about this a lot.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, And so that's why, hopefully,
my phone's dying. I guess I didn't charge my phone long enough. So if I drop off, it's not because I dropped off. It's because my battery's getting low on my cordless.
This has been fun, and I'm so glad that there are people texting you that they enjoyed this. And this, has been fun for Virginia and myself. And, and so that's a good thing. So the educators, that would be good just to be on the other shows, to hear about this, because I would like to bring that out there. If that helps people get in the schools, that would be really good for some of the authors that are, we have a lot of authors that are children's authors that listen. And hopefully our message has always been don't stop writing. We don't
exactly
want that.
Don't. It's easy to get discouraged, but it's important that we keep forging forward. And you never know when that next story will be the one connects.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
I've been doing this for like 17 years. I won't give up, but I know a lot of people do. And I was an agent also, and I saw all these people. And because the children's market was very tough to get people published, but now when they can self-publish or they can do different things, as long as it's edited and they have good illustrations, they can make it out there. So, I hope that they continue to do that.
Right, and more opportunities arise every day. And it's important to, as a children's author or any author, to get involved with the different conferences, very much like what Virginia's doing right now with her coordination in her area. And it's all about engaging and networking like any business.
Yeah.
A lot of it is word of mouth.
It is a business. It's a business.
Right, exactly. But I thank you for your time tonight and allowing me to come on the show.
I'm so glad that they were listening and they were, happy about the way it was going. And, for people to learn things is what, that's the goal is, to have everybody, continue on. I mean, I really am strong about that. And so is Virginia about keep writing. And now, these are some very good ideas for people that, we have not really discussed on any of these shows. So that's a good thing. So I'm so happy
good,
to have met
I'm
you.
Glad
and
that
thank
I
you
hit
so
some
much.
Points.
You did. I got notes. See, that's the thing. I'm hoping that someday people realize that they might not know everything, so I always take notes because I have been doing this for a long time, but every guest, there's always something that I learn from a
oh,
you know,
definitely. We're
help.
Always learning. Definitely.
Yeah, I think so. All right, so thank everybody for listening, and I think Virginia, yes, her phone probably did die out. So
right.
You and me.
But thank
but
you
thank
very
you so
much for having me on. I do appreciate the opportunity.
And keep writing.
Great. Thank you. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you. Bye.